So hey guys, are you frustrated with where you're at right now? Maybe stunted in your progress? Well, if you are, I want to recommend a place for you to go called Growth Day. Growthday.com/ed. It is the number one personal development app on the planet. It's got all kinds of high performance techniques in there, courses, accountability, journaling, live speeches from some of the top influencers in the world, including me. It's an overall environment to change your life. Growthday.com/ed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Ed Milet Show.
Well, you're welcome back to the show, everybody. I've got a friend sitting next to me here today who I am really glad he's here. He is one of the busiest people in all of the entertainment industry right now. He's got this show that just got picked up for a new season called Bookie, which is awesome. He's got Netflix specials all over the place. You guys have already seen him on Netflix, almost all of you. Movie last year came out about my father that I loved. That was a really successful project for him. He's just got all kinds of stuff going on, but he's got a tour coming up called It Ain't Right in 2024. Biggest tour he's got. So you can go to all his social media, his website to get his stuff. Sebastian Maniscalco, welcome back to the
show. Man. Thanks for having me back. I think the last time I did this had to be about 4 or 5 years ago.
4 or 5 years ago.
At the UTA offices. And reflecting back on that experience, I didn't know who you were. I didn't, you know, I wasn't aware of you. I saw clips and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then you wanted me to do your podcast, then I started looking into who you were and whatnot. Oh, this guy's knows what he's doing and whatnot. But I feel bad that you came out to where I was at UTA.
You did.
Because I noticed a lot of
most people come to the studio.
But you came to me, and I'm reflecting back on that. I'm like, oh, I probably should have went out to you. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I was just like, oh,
who is this guy at the time?
It's a hike and whatnot. But I'm glad that you asked me back. And it's nice to be here in this new setting.
You know? Yeah, well, it's a temporary setting, but yeah, it's good to have you back. And I've done his show. He's got a couple different podcasts too. The Daddy and Doctor.
Daddy vs. Doctor and the Pete and Sebastian show.
This guy's busy. He's doing everything.
Which you did Daddy vs. Doctor, and you had a clip on there where you got emotional.
Yeah.
And I put that up.
Yep.
And of course, you know, everybody really related to what you were saying in regards to your family and how they're the most important.
Except your dad.
My father, believe me, that's just the tip of the iceberg with him. Mm-hmm. He's my biggest critic. We have a lot of discussions about him. Even this tour that I'm doing, he's like, you got new material, right? You know, like, so he's constantly on me.
I was going to ask you that. One of my questions later in the interview, but we've got to know each other well, just so you guys know, since that thing 4 years ago. And so I feel like I know you pretty well now. Like, does it matter? I mean, it's funny with you and your dad, but you love this dude and you're close with your dad. You have a very unique thing with him. Do you think he's proud of you? And does it matter to you? I was one of the things I was going to ask you later, but since we brought up your dad, who doesn't like my stuff, like, is he proud of you, do you think?
Yeah, he's told me he's proud of me, but he doesn't want me to kind of rest on my success. You know, it's easy to reach a certain level, I think, for some people. And then like, all right, I'm going to stop writing material. I'm going to kind of coast on what I have. And he's always trying to instill in me, not that I don't have it already, but just being a parent, you know, you got to do better than the next time, or your material needs to be as equal to or greater to what you've done the last time, or the people are not going to come back. And he's also worried about, you know, people are spending a lot of money to come and see you. And you have to deliver a premium product for them, because like the performance is a commercial for them to come back the next time.
Okay.
In a business sense, I love doing comedy regardless. But when you go out there, you hope to knock them dead so bad where they go and tell 10 people, you got to come and see this guy.
How much percentage of the time do you do that? Where you go, I knocked it out. You're done that night. You go, yep.
I feel like I really never knock it out. There's always something in the act that could have done better, or there was a moment in the act where I'm like, oh, I got a little too angry there or whatnot. Yes, I walk off stage sometimes saying, oh, yeah, that was really a show. But I always think there is improvement in the show. Sometimes I get a little bored with the material. You know, I'm sure you go through this. You're saying the same thing.
Yes.
And you got to make it sound like it's the first time you're saying it
to
a new group of people. So for me, when I first got a new bit, I'm like, oh, I love doing this. And then it starts to kind of wane.
Yep.
And the objective for stand-up is to kind of have the material so down, but still so fresh, and then shoot your special. Rather than have it, you know, go a while.
It's too stale.
Yeah, it becomes too stale. And I think that's what happened with my last special. Not that I was so disappointed about it, but what happened was I was supposed to shoot that special kind of COVID era, like when COVID started. And then I picked up the material after COVID and then shot the special. So it kind of sat with me too long. And we were talking about this prior to even jumping on here, that talk about pain. You were talking about back pain. I'm talking about sciatic pain. I had sciatic pain ripping through my right leg really, really bad. And it was hard to be as physical as I normally am. And I was in a tuxedo, and these aren't excuses. You know, I think also I'm trying something new. You know, I tried something new. I'm like, oh, let me try and bring back to the Rat Pack.
Sinatra days,
perform in a tuxedo, have the audience perform in their dress like they were in the 60s or 50s or whatever it was. So anytime, you know, you kind of go outside your comfort zone, you know, it could really win. It could really lose. I'm not reflecting back on the special. I'm not mad that I did it that way. The only thing I regret was I probably shouldn't have worn a tuxedo, because I never wear tuxedos while performing. And it's very restrictive. And number two, that I was in pain while doing it.
Yeah. You know, you're in the mindset, you guys, when you're listening to him. The one thing about Sebastian is, and other comedians have mentioned this to me too, he's a pretty serious dude in real life. Pretty serious, pretty intense. I'd say introverted is how I would describe you. Is that all accurate, would you say?
Yeah. I mean, introverted in the sense where I'm not like life of the party.
No.
I don't. You know, I come on these podcasts. I just did kind of a podcast, golf podcast yesterday. And you got to treat them almost as performances.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you can't be like sitting here like a dud.
Right.
You know? Not that I'm going to make you die laughing during this. But I actually enjoy sitting down with someone and not being funny.
Yeah, I know you do.
I don't feel like this world I'm living in right now is, I don't really have to make you laugh or the audience laugh. It's not that type of show. But the show yesterday, they were looking for like entertainment,
so it's
gotta,
work.
Yeah, you gotta come.
You drained after?
Not drained, but you know, to be funny and not make it be forced is a little difficult, because you know, you want to make it as organic as possible. You don't want to be doing like trying to be doing bits or, oh, he tried to make me laugh or whatnot. So,
yeah, and you're not like a sticky, slippy, like slap you in the back guy. That's not your thing. Like
no.
You. And but what you're saying earlier, though, about what I said, like the mindset into someone who's a mega achiever. I mean, if you go watch this Netflix special that he did, and you guys should go watch it, it's incredible. But when you're at the highest, people that are at the highest level are really scrutinizing about their work, and they're honest about their work. They're self-aware. One of the things that I think people that get to a really high level set just a higher standard. Like they just, their standard for themselves and their performance is super high. And that's why he was telling me off camera. He's like, yeah, I don't really feel like I hit the mark on that one. He was playing golf with a dude yesterday. Tells him it wasn't his best work.
Yeah.
And, but also I think you begin to lose at anything, whether you're in business or anything, when you lose your self-awareness. You just don't, you know, and you've seen this in your industry too. It's like, this guy's just oblivious that his work isn't what it used to be, or he's not working as hard as he used to be or she used to be. So I think it's actually a really good thing that you say that. I don't love the fact that you don't feel good about it, but I thought you are really a physical comic too. So that tux was a little bit restrictive, but
yeah.
You have a lot happening. Like, so you're doing stand-up. He's one of the few, you know, a lot of you aren't like stand-up people, but like, today, Bert Kreischer's out on the show, right? He's like, today's the release. While we're recording this, he's out today. It's not like I have that many comedians on. It's ironic, but Bert is one, and you, there's only about eight, five, six, seven of you dudes who can fill up arenas, and you're one of them. And I think you were the top grossing comic, you know, when you're doing this, you'll be the top grossing comic in the world. Are you an actor? Like, what are you now? Or are you trying to be all of these things? If it was 5 years from now, you could wave a wand. Are you still doing arenas and doing stand-up? Or are you leading man in three or four movies a year?
No, I don't. I'm a stand-up comedian. That's what I am. I'm not deviating from what got me here. I really, really enjoy doing stand-up. Do I enjoy doing movies and TV? I mean, the last movie I did this about my father, it wasn't a fun experience for me. I had a lot of anxiety. I struggled because I got a family. I got two small kids. I'm 50. I got a six-year-old and a four-year-old. So I'm in Alabama for 9 weeks doing this movie. And in my head, you know, I'm a family guy first.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there going, what am I doing? Mm. What am I doing in Alabama when my daughter is at a recital, and that recital is never going to happen again at that age, at that moment? I'm not going to see that. Who knows what could happen? Mm. You know, there could be a moment there. You know, there's a memory there I'm missing. So I had that in my head. And I don't think a lot of, I shouldn't say this. You know, some people in the entertainment industry, just they go out, they do movies, and that's what I do. And the family's the family. And when I come home, I come home. And I can't. Listen, I got to be there. I got to be at my house with my kids. So that's what I was dealing with. Number two, I'm working with De Niro.
Gosh.
Who's arguably one of the best actors of our generation. And I'm questioning myself, can I do this?
Right.
Because I've been in movies, not a lot, but just pop-ins. Mm-hmm. But this is the first movie I'm doing, soup to nuts. And I'm starring in it. I co-wrote it. And then, you know, you question yourself, what am I doing? Should I be here? Can I do this? So that was going on.
How'd you get through it?
Well, then I'm in pain, too, with the sciatica. You know, I'm dealing.
You were starting to sound like an old, just.
Yeah, right. I mean, listen, I'm 50. I should not be walking around like you talk about.
Yep.
It's going to be hard to get off out of the chair.
Yeah.
Me too. We might need
help from everybody in here to get out of our chairs.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I did was, all right, I said, this is a great opportunity for me. The process for me is not fun. It's 14 hours on the set. Comedy, you go hour and a half, you're done, you go home. This is, you know, for a comedian. Plus, I'm doing a comedy. Nobody's laughing. You know,
yeah, no feedback.
I'm missing the feedback. So it was a little difficult to get used to doing that type of performance.
Is it like working with De Niro?
Very quiet. He's not one to, you know, like cut. It's not like I go up to him going, so where are you going tonight? You know,
really?
It's none of that. He has a, you know, goes to his chair. He's got paperwork, and when it looks like he's opening up another notebook in between scenes.
Seriously?
Yeah, he's like, you know, he's on the phone, he's talking, and so he's nice. You know, if I went up to him and asked him a question and whatnot, he's, you know, he's receptive of it. But, you know, like, he's, you know, in his own world, he's to himself. He's very introverted. I'm not that introverted. I'm personable enough where I'm talking to people on set and the rest of the
cast. Is it almost uncomfortable?
Yeah, I just don't think he, you know, has the gift of gab, which is fine. I, you know, just, you know, maybe he does with people that he's really close with, which I could relate to.
But I would think, like, if I'm already insecure, I'm working with the GOAT, right? And I'm an actor, but I'm new to this big of acting. I want the guy, when we're done with the scene, to go, great job, you nailed that. Or, like, here's some feedback. You're not.
That happened later on.
Okay.
When I had a scene where I had to cry at the end of the movie, and I've never cried on film before. I'm an emotional guy. I have no problem crying. But, you know, when you're acting, it's a different muscle. So I went into that scene going, man, I hope I cry. And we're on a tarmac. There's an airplane there. I had to be out of breath in the scene. So I had to run around the tarmac with this leg that I have an issue with.
Right?
And I come into the scene. We do the scene. He's crying exactly where he's supposed to be crying. And I'm looking at this guy in the scene going,
this guy's amazing.
Like, I'm not even in the scene. I'm just like almost a fan.
Yeah.
Watching him cry. And they yell, cut. Now, I noticed that he's very different this day than he was any other day because of its emotional scene. And he wanted to keep the emotion there. So he was like, come on, let's do it again. Mm-hmm. So now I'm getting in my head. I go, oh, Garrett, mm-hmm. fucking team up because mm-hmm. I don't know how many cries this guy's got left. Right? Like, I don't know. So we do it again. I don't cry. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I go, bro, I need help. Mm-hmm. I need help. Can you help me out? So we walk on the plane together, just mm-hmm. him and I. I said, I don't know how to get there. Mm-hmm. He goes, well, I was going to tell you, but I don't know your process. I go, there's no, I'm just hoping this comes out of me. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I think in this particular instance, he's like, I think about my son. And he's your age, and he starts crying, talking about his son.
To you.
To me. Mm. This is not even in the scene. This is like a moment we're having. And I start to cry. And I go, I gotta use this. Mm. So I run around. I come into the scene. I'm crying throughout the scene, which I'm not really supposed to, but, you know, I'm like, oh, wow, this is working. Cut. Let's do it again. Now they're going to do it again.
Do it again. What
the fuck? I don't know if I got it.
Anymore. I don't have another one of these.
So, you know, that moment, he was really, really helpful in teaching me how to get to that moment. Mm. And I learned a hell of a lot just being around him and how he, for example, in scenes, he's always doing something. You know, if he's got a pack, he's packing. He wants to know, would I pack? You think I'd pack the socks on this side of the bag? Or he's very specific in his movements.
Wow.
Which, again, for me, a guy who doesn't do this that often, you know, I would just generally, okay, where do I stand? And I'm going to talk. But, you know, he uses the environment around him. Which,
attention to detail is crazy, too.
Yeah. And it's believable. You know, if you're in a scene and you're fiddling around and drinking some water, some nuts or whatever you're doing, not necessarily eating, but if you're doing an activity, it makes it believable. And you as an actor are not so in your head about being in a scene. You're almost, you know, the lines are almost secondary as you're doing something as you would in real life. If I was talking to you and cleaning the dishes, you know, it's just more of a natural vibe. So I think it helped me for Bookie, which I felt extremely relaxed. It was in Los Angeles. I was with Chuck Lorre, who's, you know, done north of 1,000 episodes of television, and I felt really comfortable with his, you know, just him knowing what he wants. Not that the director in About My Father
did,
she was great, but Chuck Lorre in TV, it's just, you know, you're working with one of the best ever. So I felt like About My Father prepared me for Bookie.
So you're going to be acting because you're good at it. You look good. I'm starting to do some too. And like, I'm so insecure about it. Like, I just, what you just said, like, I haven't done it. It's new. I'm used to doing, like, your stand up is my speaking or being a businessman, right? It's like super new to me. So I have like a ton of imposter syndrome about it. But you're going to be doing more of it. So, hey guys, as you know, I've partnered up with my good friend Brennan Burchard, who's created the greatest personal development system that has ever been designed, called Growth Day. There's everything from journaling to accountability programs, live messages every Monday from myself and other influencers. There's an opportunity for you to get courses that would cost thousands of dollars completely for free. It's incredible. Go to growthday.com/ed and check it out. Despite everything the Fed has been trying, we are still feeling the effects of inflation. Filling up your car, grocery shopping, home repairs, everything is more expensive. And most of you are paying these bills with a credit card. Credit card debt is at an all-time high. If you're a homeowner, there is a way out. You need to call my friends at American Financing. They can put together a plan to pay off that high-interest credit card debt and create meaningful savings for you every month. They're saving people just like you an average of $854 a month, and closing in as fast as 10 days. Don't wait. Get yourself into a better position. Call their salary-based mortgage consultants today. It costs nothing to get started. And if you start today, you could delay 2 mortgage payments, giving you greater savings up front. American Financing can help get that monkey off your back. 888-995-2440. That's 888-995-2440. Or visit AmericanFinancing.net. NMLS 182334. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org. Hey guys, I want to talk to you about Shopify. You know, when I started the show, the furthest thing from my mind was doing online business, and now I can't imagine my life without it. So I love Shopify because they're a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. So whether you're in the startup phase where you're just launching your online store, or you're at that really big business where you're like, hey, we just hit $1 million in order stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. They've helped me through every single stage. I wouldn't even know what to do without them. So whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered big time. They help turn browsers into buyers. They convert. Their checkout's 36% better than all the leading competitors. And I've used them for everything I do online. So every single thing you see that I market online, Shopify is somehow involved. I wouldn't even know what to do without them. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/mylet, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/mylet now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/mylet. I'm just curious, like, all you got going on, take someone into, I mean, you're so humbled, but this is a dude who was a waiter. You were at the Four Seasons for years, right? I mean,
yeah, 98 to 05.
How long?
7 years, 98 to 05. Yeah,
so he'd leave there, go do stand up, come back and be a server again the same night, right? And now, flash forward, I mean, seriously, brother, like just for a minute, like let people, like there are people, there's a lot of people right now that are in that waiter stage of their life that listen to my show, mm-hmm. that want to be you, that they want to be that entrepreneur, they want to be that businessman, they want to write the book, they want to be the speaker, they want to be the whatever, the athlete. And now you flash forward, here's what you just said to me. Yeah, I'm doing a movie with Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
Now I got this show bookie. I fill up arenas. I got this beautiful wife, Lana. I got two amazing kids. My dad's still alive to see all the success that I'm having. Like, I mean, and be real about it. Is it what you thought? Is success, because it wasn't for me, is success like what you thought it would be? How you'd feel about yourself, how much you would enjoy it, what your like emotions would be day to day in doing it? Like, I had a picture that when I would get there, like everything would probably be okay. I don't know. I thought I wouldn't feel as much pressure. I actually almost feel more pressure, if I'm being honest, right? Like to keep it going and to maintain it and to grow it. I thought I'd have more confidence or pride in myself when I got there. I don't know. Like I thought certain elements would be different. What about for you? Like you've got a really good life. Do you enjoy it? Like really? Or are you in the midst of trying to run it and keep it together and grow it more than you get a chance to enjoy it?
So I'm on the transition of it because I'm exactly like yourself. Mm. Where I was happier as a performer when I was doing the Holiday Inn Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey, and coming up and making a room full of strangers who really didn't know who I was laugh. And then after that, going out, meeting, greeting everybody in the lobby, taking photos and whatnot. That for me was like really, really fun. I mean, I was. You know, geez, I was in a 900 square foot apartment. I was making some money, but nothing, mm-hmm. you know, nothing crazy. I'm sure some of your listeners, you know, are very diligent about writing down goals. What I want.
You told me that.
Yeah.
It's not your thing. He loves motivational speaking. He loves goal setting.
No. I love hearing motivational speaking and some of these things. I'm like, oh, I just, my mind doesn't.
You're a worker.
Work that way. It's like, I go out to Pasadena Ice House and I'll do four sets. That's kind of my way I work.
Yep.
But to answer your question, I am now in the process of trying to enjoy this more because as we were talking, you know, it's like, all right, you get to a certain level and then you buy a home and there's a lot of things that go along with that home, maintenance of it. There's, you know, more people in your life that you are paying, you know, because you're growing your business, your enterprise. So there's more personalities now that you're dealing with, which you didn't have. I didn't have that. I was doing everything myself. If somebody ordered a DVD, I would sign it, put it, and now it's like there's mm-hmm. there's a social media team, there's a PR team, there's, you know, there's just a lot of people. And also I have a fear of like, I didn't grow up this way. I didn't grow up with the money. I what's enough?
Mm-hmm.
What am I working towards? Am I gonna, what am I doing? I mean, what the hell am I doing?
Yes.
Am I working towards what, you know, we're talking about family. I'm a family guy, but there, you know, you do have to have like a little bit of a balance. You know, yeah. Should I be doing Vegas 5 times a year? Mm-hmm. And that's it. Mm-hmm. Do I need to go on an arena tour? Do I need to do another TV or movie mm-hmm. or another podcast? You talk about doing all these things, which yeah. I think people feel pressured
so do I.
to do. Oh, like, oh, so-and-so's got, I got the podcast. Oh, yeah. So-and-so, I got the movie.
You're right.
Yes. So for me, I'm like, am I doing podcasts because I really love it?
Mm. You mean your own?
My own.
Yeah.
Even going out and doing podcasts,
mm-hmm.
like I've heard, oh, if you want your podcast to grow, you got to go on other podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And then those people see you mm-hmm. and then they're going to, are they? I don't know. You know, right. Like I'm often like, I like, you know, like, podcasts that I like doing, I enjoy. I know that this is going to be something I enjoy,
right?
Because you're a host who doesn't talk, you know, much. Mm-hmm. You know, you give the questions, you add a little color, but it's you know, you want to hear what I have to say. And sometimes I go on podcasts, and it's like, you know, I don't know. I mean, this maybe not my vibe. Maybe mm-hmm. this is, I don't fit in here. This mm-hmm. is, you know, I'm not like, you know, wacky and crazy and. Not gonna, you know, do something that, you know, you're, you know, these people are gonna go, what the fuck?
Right, right.
So I don't know. I don't know. I'm wrestling with a lot of these.
I know you are. Things. I am too. I'm trying to figure out, this is great that we're talking about. We're 2 50-year-old dudes basically in a good point in our career where people would like to get. And I think people would like to know, what does that feel like when I get there? That's why I ask you that. And it's not always elements of it or what you would think it would be, but there's you know, I'll ask you a few of these things. Like, I struggle with, I don't want to lose momentum. I don't want to lose my relevance. Do I not want to lose relevance because, like, I might not make the money that I'm making? Or do I not want people to see me not be relevant? Like, I'm up the flagpole now, and then they'll go, that guy used to be. Is it that? Is it, I ask myself, when does this pace end? Do you ever wonder that too? Like, you can go back after I tell you what some of mine are. Like, when's this pace end? Like, to what end is this? In 10 years, am I still working 330 days a year? Like, I thought I wouldn't be. And then the navigating of family and all of these other things. Do you worry about losing momentum, like losing your relevance? Do you struggle with those same things I'm saying too? Like, it's like, when does this end? Do I want to be 80 years old doing this on a Tuesday? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, does that enter your mind?
Yeah, I do think about momentum. Mm-hmm. I do think about
which you have.
Yeah, but what if I told you, Ed Mylett, go away for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Just stop doing this. Stop mm-hmm. doing the motivation. Mm-hmm. Just go away for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Just relax. Mm-hmm. You know, enjoy. You know, you get 2 kids in college. Oh, mm-hmm. Go up. And not mm-hmm. that you're not doing this.
Yep.
But go up. You know, take some more family vacations. Mm-hmm. Pick up a hobby. And I know mm-hmm. you golf, but like, yeah. I've often thought maybe I should, you know, go to cooking school.
Mm-hmm. Which you love.
Which I love.
Yeah.
And Chris Rock told me this, and he's very diligent about this. He goes, it's hard to make an entrance when you never leave the room, right? And
wow.
And I was like, because he's like, you're always touring, right? Mm-hmm. And they always have access to you because you're always out there.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go away and you come back, it's more of a spectacle. It's more an event because mm-hmm. no one's seen you for 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, what does he have to say? What's he doing?
Mm-hmm.
I think nowadays with social media, I think Michael Jackson had it really dialed in where, you know, you didn't see this guy everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you did, it was like a unicorn. You know, he was mm-hmm. on Arsenio once. He popped out to give Eddie Murphy an award. I was like, oh my God.
I remember
he's
that.
There. Mm-hmm. He drives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
mm-hmm.
So I often think to myself, all right, Do I need to be doing all this? Do I need to be on social media constantly with the phone? And then, hey, I'm skiing.
Yeah.
Do I want to do the video? I don't know. Do I? But I feel like if the people don't see me, they're not going to buy the tickets to come to the show. You know, it all has this,
yes,
you know, this effect. So I don't know. I think Garth Brooks took 10 years off because he wanted to be with his family and raise his kids. He came back and he's fine.
Yeah, he is. But there's an element of it. Like, you're on a great point here. Like, what's the right rest? What's the right calibration? And a lot of the people that listen to my show are trying to get there. But at the same time, you know, I watch this, a lot of comedians. There's an edge that you keep by staying in the reps. And even like, no, I know you can't say this, but like some of the guys, you even their names, you just like, when Eddie Murphy took a bunch of time off and now I see him now, I'm like, I don't know if he's as funny as he used to be. You know, I don't know if the entrepreneur is as sharp as they used to be. I don't know if Garth Brooks is as good. I haven't seen his music. I don't know. But there's that element of the edge too, where like you, there's a rhythm to success.
Yeah.
That's the one thing people don't tell you is like, it's not just the work and the reps. There's a rhythm that you get into. And there's a momentum and it's a magnifier. It can make someone pretty good seem really, really great. One of the things I've struggled with, though, that has not made my momentum well is I haven't always hired well around me. And I'm just curious, you said that you've got these people around you now. Have you had anybody, if this, not who it is or what it was, but how have you dealt, if it's happened, with people that have worked for you or with you that have either let you down, purposely harmed you, not done a good job around you, like, how have you dealt with that? Have you had that experience where it's like, this is not what I thought it would be?
Well, listen, I mean, I'm a comedian and I'm not, I didn't, you know, I didn't grow up or in my 20s, I wasn't like in a company.
Yeah.
And I don't know like how marketing, sales, CEO, like that language where it's like interpersonal skills with people and dealing with all these different personalities. Yeah. I mean, I was the president of my fraternity in college, right? There's a lot of different personalities there, but I wouldn't say my strong suit is being a unbelievable leader. You know, it's just, it's not like it's not what I do.
Yeah.
But you almost thrown into this thing where it's like, okay, now I'm kind of like running a business.
Yeah. You're a brand, you're a company.
Yeah.
And like Jay-Z says, I'm a businessman, you know, like I'm a businessman. You know, you're now a business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some people adapt to that.
Remind me not to quote any hip hop lyrics again. Go ahead. That was just a big miss.
When you first said it, I'm like, businessman. Yeah, he's a businessman.
There's but something in there.
I'm a business.
Man. Yeah, I nailed it at the end. I pulled it together. It just took me a minute.
Yeah. So, you know. Yeah, hiring people. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to ask in an interview. When people come in and interview for a position, right? I don't know. You know,
it's like, are you going to do good?
Yeah, you don't know until you know, right? The way I look at it is like, and plus, I'm the personality. It's like, I expect people to read my mind, right? And then when they don't, I'm like, it's it. They suck, you know? And then, like, rather than tell them, hey, listen, this is the way I want it, because sometimes I often think if I do say something, does it come off as being too direct? Does the person feel like I'm always worried about how the person is taking my message?
Are you? Yeah.
Right. And a lot of people just say it, you know, like, listen, when I walk in, I want Evian water filled. But then, you know, sometimes I think I like things the way I want it, but then I'm like, I'm also struggling too with, I used to put the water in the thing and
I do that too.
You know, like, and who am I now? I need it the way I want it, but I can't do it because I don't got enough time. And the person thinks, well, why don't you?
Me too.
It's a f***ed up mindset, you know, too. Instead of like, hey, I'm paying you to do a job.
Yep.
And this is what the job, requires. Sometimes I struggle with, I got a problem. Here's one. Sometimes I got a problem and hey, yo, the gardener's come and do the gardening and I'm doing something else. In my head, the gardener's looking at me going, you can't cut the grass.
That's what I think too.
What the fuck kind of thing is that?
Dude, hey, yesterday I had a guy come over. This is so interesting. I had a guy, we were so wired. Like, I had a guy come over. There's a storm coming to Florida. So there's a guy that comes over that covers my outdoor furniture for me, right? Because I'm here doing things that would produce more revenue than covering the outdoor furniture.
Yeah.
Literally, when I saw the guy, I saw him looking at me like, you're not a man. You can't cover your own furniture outside. I think the exact same thing. Like, that's exactly how my mind works, because I was that guy who did that stuff before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now I'm like, and it's funny because people will think like I'm like this big, intense boss. I don't like to make people uncomfortable. If there's even like gardener example, if the yard's not being done right, I'm like, babe, will you let the gardener know? Like, I don't even like to be the person to tell people. I won't send food back in a restaurant. Like, I'm just, I don't like to, I've all been a busboy. You know, I've been a server. I don't like to make people uncomfortable, yet it's to my detriment because I don't always get great performance around me either. So you do have a little bit of that too.
Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by Zippix Nicotine Toothpicks. Zippix brings you a totally satisfying, convenient, and great way to help you curb your nicotine cravings. Had a few friends of mine I've been playing golf with. They've got these toothpicks in their mouth. I'm like, what are you guys doing? They're like, dude, Zippix. I'm like, what is that? The more I dug into it, I'm like, wow, this is a really interesting product, because here's what it does. Zippix toothpicks give you an easier and better and more discreet way to help you get your fix. They're also one of the most effective nicotine products on the market. Zippix also offers caffeine and B12 infused toothpicks if you're not a nicotine user, or if you're trying to get away from your nicotine habit. Ditch the cigarettes, ditch the vape, and get some nicotine-infused toothpicks at ZippixToothpicks.com today. Get 10% off your first order by using the code MYLETT, M-Y-L-E-T-T, at your checkout. Your lungs will be glad you did it. You must be 21 or older. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Zip more, smoke less with Zippix Nicotine Toothpicks.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
But I want to get a couple things focused on this for you, so I understand you better. You don't know the end game, then, you're saying. You're not really sure. You're just kind of in the grind of growing and producing content and shows and stuff that produces revenue and that you enjoy doing, like expressing yourself. That's really where you're at.
Yeah.
What are you going to, so if we flash forwarded to 60, so you got 10 more years. And I said to you, hey, man, you nailed these 10 years. All your dreams came true. Everything you want. I'm not saying you're goal setting here, but like, would it be you've made 10 more big movies, or you've just done a bunch of stand up? Or is it more like, nope, my kids are now teenagers. We've had great memories together. And the most important thing to me was that I just got the time with my family. And that's really the thing that I'm most focused on.
Yeah, I'm not sitting over here going, I need to accomplish. If I did stand up and did bookie, that would be fine for me.
Okay.
Do I want challenges in my career? Yeah. That's why I do the podcast. I go, can I make Daddy Versus Doctor a podcast that people would listen to, not only for information about parenting, but for entertainment? So I don't know at 60 what I'll be doing. There is literally no plan. I'm literally living day by day. My wife often goes, you know, like, let's plan things this year so there's a vacation in the books and that we're not scrambling to go to Utah in November for a December trip, you know. Like, there's families, like, I'm like, how do they do it? Every year they're December 22nd to the 28th, they're there.
I don't get that.
I'm like, man, I don't even know December. Can we book that far in advance?
Yeah.
There might be something that comes up that I got, you know, like that.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get out of that.
Me too. I thought by this age I would have that figured out, and I don't. We're more similar than I realized, even though I tell people to do the things that I'm not doing all the time, because I don't do a lot of that either. So, okay, I want to get into some couple productive things here just for the audience to know. How many other stand-ups make you laugh?
Oh, man. There's very talented guys out there. It's just when you're in this business, I just don't think. Yeah, you laugh and you go, it's funny. Mm-hmm. But I don't, you know, like the last one, guy I was laughing at, literally laughing, where I'm not looking at the joke or anything, was Giannis Pappas. He did, check him out. He's
okay.
Really, really funny. And for whatever the reason, he had me on the floor. Like literally, I rolled off the couch onto the floor laughing. That's what I want to feel when I watch a comedian. So yeah, I laugh more at like things you're not supposed to laugh at, like things like even like in a drama movie, I might be laughing at something.
What are you talking about?
Like, yeah,
what?
just things that
I gotta understand this.
I couldn't even give you an example off the top of my head, but.
Things you should not be laughing at, like someone dies in a movie, you're like, that is freaking
funeral.
Hilarious.
I'm laughing at a funeral.
Funeral, but it's not a comedy scene.
There, I'll give you an example. And I don't know if this is appropriate or not. I was at my uncle's funeral.
Okay.
Who recently passed away. And I was in the back, and I was with my sister, and, you know, people are crying and whatnot. And I'm looking around, telling my sister, the wake thing is antiquated, the way they got this set up. And everybody's hungry here. Would it be inappropriate to have like past hors d'oeuvres at a wake, right? This is just a thought. Because the food's always in a room down in the basement where you got to go. It's like a little convenient. Or a bar.
It's the open bar.
Cocktail. You know, like, nice to take the edge off with a stall. Those type of moments, I feel, and this is me saying it, but like, I know guys, I got a friend back home. His name is George Kafka. He's one of the funniest guys I know. Like, we laugh at things like this.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking for, like, does that become a bit? Like, is what you just said going to be a bit now? Like, are
no,
you?
No, I haven't even thought about it until okay. now. Like, and my sister was like, this is like kind of tablet. Just, this is, don't smile here.
Don't smile.
Yeah.
Here.
Like, you know, it's like, I don't know. I just tend like wakes seem to be very, you know, sad. Someone just passed away, and for somebody like cracking jokes in the back might be looked as like, what? Here, you know, but I also look at it as this is a healing for me.
Yeah,
this is healing. I had my moment with my uncle. I looked at him. I said my prayer. I looked at the you know, they have a screen with all the memories of him, and I sat there and I was sitting there bawling and crying, looking at all the stuff and whatnot. But afterwards, where's the hors d'oeuvres? You know,
like, let's have a drink.
I like that. By the way, anyone listen to this, at my funeral, have an open bar. Just have some cigar rollers.
I don't know.
An open bar. I like that idea. Do you, before you do what you're great at, so everyone has this thing that they're great at. You're great at stand-up. You're great at communicating. You're great at making people laugh. You're great at other stuff, but like that's obviously a gift you've monetized really well and that you're awesome at. What's it feel like when you're doing something you're great at? So like before you do it, so you got the... You know, you're going to go do an arena. What's the first arena on the tour? Do you know where you go first?
I think it's Norfolk, Virginia.
Okay, Norfolk. Okay, Norfolk. Probably Norfolk, but whatever. Right. In Virginia.
Yeah,
that place. And so you're going to go there. It's like an hour before the show. I want to know what you feel before you go up and what you feel when you walk off the hour after.
So the feeling I'm feeling before I go on is it's very calm. I'm not doing anything backstage that is pumping me up to go on stage. You know, I saw the Tony Robbins thing. This guy's jumping on a trampoline. He's getting all hyped up. He's walking around and he comes out and boom. That's his style. My style is, I'm backstage. I'm listening to my bits, some of the recordings that I've done over the past, whatever, year and a half, making sure that, you know, did I miss something? Is something going to pop in my head? So there's nothing that I'm doing that's out of the ordinary. And the feeling is a little bit of anxiety. And then walking to the stage. These are moments where I'm, you know, I walk through the crowd to get to the stage, so I'm high-fiving people, this, that, and the other thing. But again, like, I'm not like a rah-rah guy. It's not like I'm getting the crowd going, I'm coming out.
Yeah.
You know, so I often think of that. I'm in my head there. As I'm walking through the audience, I go, you know, should I be doing more? Or is this,
do you really?
Is this a cool entrance? Me coming through, slapping. I don't know. Like, I'm always thinking in my head. I'm never living in the moment. I'm always kind of like.
Interesting.
Like thinking other things than what I'm doing at that particular moment.
Interesting.
And then when I go up on stage, when I go up there.
Yeah.
It's a little uncomfortable, to be honest with you. I really miss the days of going on stage and nobody knew who the hell I was. Mm. And it was just. I felt like. All right. You don't even know what's about to hit you, right?
Yeah.
You don't never seen anything like this before.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've seen it, right? And now they got something to compare it to. So there's a pressure there.
Yep.
Of, is this going to be, is this guy going to bring it tonight? What has he got up his sleeve?
Could I ask on that?
Yeah.
This is a hard question. I mean this with like respect, okay? Do you ever worry about that very thing right there? Like what's, I don't mean this by disrespect to anybody. Like you can develop a Dice Clay type thing. I know this is, you know, your industry, but like, all right, is he going to do the nursery? Is it the hickory dickory dock? Do you worry about staying who you are, yet staying fresh enough that it is like he's got, it's new. Do you know what I mean when I say that?
Yes. Yeah, so there are some iconic bits that comedians have.
Okay.
And people are like, oh, I love when he does that, that, mm-hmm. that. Which comedians run into this a lot is like, they're not like musicians where, you mm-hmm. know, you have they want to hear the hits. Comedy, they want to hear, what do you got now?
Mm-hmm.
You made me laugh before, but I want something else. Mm-hmm. Now, I have some really, really good bits that people kind of know me for,
mm-hmm.
and they've seen them online. I haven't done those bits live, really, in years, right? So if a person comes to see me, on this tour, they might have not seen the Chipotle bit live mm-hmm. or the doorbell bit live, right?
Yeah.
So I often go, maybe at the end, and I know some comedians do, I think Jim Gaffigan does this where he comes back out, what do you want to hear?
Gotcha.
And he does like
okay.
favorite. So I don't think there's anything wrong
okay.
with doing some of your older stuff that mm-hmm. people might have never seen before.
But now when you walk up, you're like, hey, man, it's a different feeling. You liked better when you're like, you're about to see some thunder you've never seen in your life. Now you're like, they're expecting thunder. And that's a different feeling when you're up there.
Yeah. Is the thunder going to be as loud as it was last time? Mm-hmm. So that's always the, and you'd like to think as a performer, like you got your finger on the pulse. This is mm-hmm. what they want to hear. Cause you know, you never want to kind of, I get a lot of times, we love your father and that bit and mm-hmm. being Italian. We relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
So you got those people, mm-hmm. right? But then you don't want to be like catering to like
right.
the audience's desires, right? Mm-hmm. You want to do what makes you happy and then hopefully that will make the audience happy.
That's a big thing as a speaker too, right there.
What?
Yeah, like, hey, I want you to do the thing where like, man, I want to run through the ceiling when I get out. I go, well, that's not the vibe tonight. Tonight, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do what I want to do tonight because I'm the speaker.
Well, often yeah. too, you as a speaker, mm-hmm. you're growing as an individual. Right.
Right. What used to interest me, even what I used to think, I don't even always think anymore.
Yeah.
Same thing. Now, what about when you, are you ever up there going, I'm crushing in the middle of it? Or do you not let yourself have that feeling? Or like, ooh, I'm slipping here. You know, I've had that when I'm speaking. I'm like, wow, that was quiet right there. You know, and it's almost, I wasn't thinking it, but the lack of response was like almost a wake up for me when I'm up there.
Yeah, I think you hear the silence more than you hear the roars. Mm. So I'm never going, this is killing. I go, oh, wow, that we're in a hole.
Right.
We got to dig out of this quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hearing that more than I'm hearing the constant laughter. I mean, I hear the laughter and it's not like I'm oblivious to, oh, wow, mm-hmm. that landed, but I'm more tuned into the.
Me too.
The silence.
You walk off, you got an hour now. Is it what I do is I go, and this is how I want people, and whatever they do for a living, this is what I think you should be doing, like reflecting on your work. But like when I'm done, I'm usually like, I missed that. I forgot this. I should have said this differently. And I go through a thing of insecurity. That's how I would describe when I walk off stage. I'm actually insecure before I walk up, a little bit of anxiety and all that. And when I'm there, I feel pretty good usually on the stage speaking and doing what I do. I think this is true if someone's giving a sales presentation or whatever. And then when I'm done, I become insecure again. almost instantly, where I'm like, oh, did I do this? I messed that up. Man, that was an opportunity. Do you have that or no?
Well, before I answer that question, I want to ask you, while you're up there as a speaker, I mean, for me, the validation that I'm doing well is the laughter. For you as a motivational speaker, what is the gauge for you that, oh, this, I'm killing? I've never been to one of these things, so I don't know.
It's harder. Usually their response, though, their noise level. Actually, they're engaged with me. If when I do drop sucks, I use humor too. So like when I do drop humor, is it like they're right with me immediately? Are they writing notes down if I'm giving a talk on something? If I'm doing something emotional where they should be crying, are they crying? More for me, actually, it's not even really true. I just kind of feel it when I'm on. It's like a spirit, like as a Christian person, it's the Holy Spirit. But like I feel it when I'm on. I'm like, we're in rhythm together. There's a rhythm with me and them that I know we're in and they know we're in, and I can kind of almost go anywhere I want. And there's a connection, this sounds weird, but like an energetic connection that I feel with the room, the vast majority of the room, and I'm so weird. There'll be 10,000 people in the room. I'll find the one dude not paying attention and I'll look at him for some reason. I don't know why I do that, but there's an energy that I'm feeling that I know we're one. And that's really what it would be like, we're one. And then there's other times when I'm speaking where like we're two. There's me and then there's the audience and we're separate and I'm speaking to them rather than like with them.
Yeah.
And that energy's different. Does that make sense? Do you feel that same thing?
That's a definite feeling I have where no matter what you do up there, you feel like you could do anything.
Yeah.
You can even go off your script. Like sometimes I'm feeling so good that I'm like in the zone where I could just improv and everything that's coming out of my mouth, I even go, wow. And then I thought about that 3 years ago and it came out right now.
Yeah.
So I definitely feel that there's an energy or symbiotic relationship that you have with the audience. So
I do. I think that energy exists in anything you're doing that you enjoy, that you're great at. So I think if you're a good salesperson, when you really got someone with you, there's that energetic connection. When you're with your kids, when you're doing anything, you can feel an energetic connection that is lacking when it's not there. And I hate that feeling when it's not there. When it is there, other than being with my family, it's the greatest feeling in the world.
So do you feel like, and I've often felt this, when you go to a social gathering and you meet somebody that maybe you don't know, and the energy, I feel like the energy is even contained in small conversations.
Totally.
Right? Now I often go, is it me that's not giving the energy?
Me too.
Is that person going, I can't connect with this person because he's doesn't want to be. So I often think of that in conversation. Am I the problem?
Me too.
Or what? What do you think?
I think I have the same feeling. And this is weird. We're doing this on my podcast, but I'm glad we are. I have the same problem. And I think like, because I have such a pretty good energetic connection in front of crowds of people now, I'm often surprised by like at social gatherings that I don't. And it's rare that I meet someone that I vibe with energetically. And I'm wondering, is that because I've changed and I've become isolated and I'm different? Or am I an odd dude? But like, feel like often I'm forcing myself one-on-one situations and social things to have that connection that's much easier for me in groups. I don't know why that is, but like I do rarely feel that great vibe one-on-one when I meet new people. Not meaning I don't like them or love them. I also always feel that when people come up to me that are fans, I always ask my wife, was I nice enough to them? Like that they're looking for something more from me in that moment than they got. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like, and I feel so weird about that. Like I want them to feel that I love and appreciate them and connect. And I more often than not feel like I let them down with whatever my lack of energy was with them.
Yeah.
Do you have that?
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like, oh, you know, because sometimes they'll catch you off guard or whatnot.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I'm, or they're behaving in a way where I'm bothered by it.
You? It's crazy.
Well, you know, like someone will come up and start doing my act right in front of me.
Oh,
right?
And
I really appreciate that. They really enjoy what I do. But it's like, you know, I was at an amusement park with my family and my son and my daughter. And you know, the guys coming up and doing my bits. And I'm like, oh, thanks. But like, sometimes I can't hide the awkwardness of it all. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I want to take a photo. Let's take a photo. That's literally what they're there for. They want the photo. It's
leading up to that.
Yeah. Rarely is it, hey man, really like what you do. And then boom. And those people, I really appreciate those people. I want to talk to them more just right. because,
right.
you know, they're not looking for the photo, which I understand you want the photo. That's great. But I just wish sometimes it was a little bit more than that.
What do you want for your kids? We don't have that much more time, but like you've now done, you know, what you wanted to do in your life. And my attitude with my kids has changed. And mine are in college now, you know, and they're both like starting to look at their careers. And I don't know. I think the advice that someone asked me the other day, I really wrestled with this. Like, do you regret that you missed some of these things with your kids to pursue your whatever those successes were? Like you said, I'm doing this movie and I'm missing a recital or whatever. And I used to say, this is a big moment on the show for me and you. This will be a clip for people.
Oh, I love when I get single.
Here we go.
You guys ready? Get the cleanup.
Get ready. No. It's not one of those. I used to say like, yeah, I do regret that I missed that thing. And because you can never get them back. But now that I'm where I'm at in my life, and I have a lot of my buddies who didn't miss any of those things. But here's the truth. They also didn't pursue financial stability for their family. They didn't protect them. And by the way, the easy things to go to the recital sometimes, the easy things to be the football coach. That's fun. The hard things to go work. And this is just the real. Now that my kids are older, we were having dinner on Christmas Eve and this topic came up. And I said, well, you know, because I want everyone to know the hard work they're putting in. This is important. Because the Instagram culture, the easy thing is, goes, yeah, I regret. I missed it. You're not going to get that ball game back. True. But your kids live a lot longer than just when they're little. And I said, you know, here's where we are. We're at dinner and we're in a nice restaurant. And tonight you guys are in a safe house. And the world can't get at us financially. Bella, you're going to a college that costs me six figures a year. Max, you're going to go to school. You're probably going to go play a little bit of golf after. I'll be able to help you do that. Your kids will be okay. I have a lot of friends that are my age that are scared financially. They can't help their children. They couldn't help their grandchildren if they got in big trouble. They can't take care of their parents. I've been able to take care of your mom's parents. I've been able to take care of my parents when they've needed things. I can be the go-to person in our family and you guys are safe. So yeah, I did miss some things, but now that I'm on the other side of it and I see my buddies that are on the other side of it, life is long. Life is long. It's not just those years that are in your house. I don't think I do. I think I'm kind of proud of myself for doing the hard thing. The easy thing, frankly, was to be your flag football coach. That would be fun playing with kids all day. And I'm not demeaning that either. But there's an argument to be made for protecting and winning and supporting and providing for your family also. And I'm being serious about it. So I wonder if you even give yourself enough credit for that. And I wonder what advice you would give your kids about that, like pursuing your dream, becoming successful, you know, or what matters? Is it just like being like, I think our wives are similar in that, like, they're just happy, you know, like they don't need all this stuff either, but I have provided security and peace for my family. And it's almost like you don't know what you don't know. My kids don't know what it would be like to have a dad who's financially struggling in his 50s or 60s. Or grandparents who were going to get displaced from their home because they couldn't afford it. So I don't know that I do regret it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the question I have is, what's
enough?
What's enough? Like, you know, could I stop now and be comfortable the rest of my life? I don't know what's ahead. Mm. What I would tell my kids is happiness. What is happiness? Is it success? Is it money? Is it all these things? You know, all these people that will listen to you. Mm. Yeah, bro, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want the boat. I want the this or that. First of all, if you're in it for that, then I think you're off to the wrong start. Mm. You got to do what you love. And after you find that out, all that stuff will come eventually. And I never got in this business for fame, any of that.
Amazing.
So I tell my kids, you know, whatever makes you happy, you know, whatever you're having fun doing. Now, I asked my daughter, she's six, what do you want to be when you grow up? And she goes, I want to be a mommy. and I want to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. Now, those two things, and when you attach money to those two things, it's not there, mm-hmm. right? But if she's going to be happy being a teacher and a mommy, man, that's success for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did something right as a parent. I had a conversation with my friend because at one point I was like, I want my kids to be more successful than I am, right?
Yeah.
And he goes, that's never going to happen. Mm. I go, why? He goes, you know how hard it is for you to get to where you were and then to have your kids replicate that equally or greater? It's very unlikely, right? Mm. But then I'm like, is it? Is it unlikely? I mean, are they seeing now? And to go to your point about being home as a dad and doing the basketball coach or doing this, the kids don't see that parent that who's doing all go to work. Mm-hmm. So they're like, oh, is this what life is? Mm-hmm. Daddy's home or mm-hmm. mommy's home and they just play with us all day long. Mm-hmm. When they see you go away and come back or they mm-hmm. see what you do and go, oh man, that's mm-hmm. that look at daddy does. He does this. Mm-hmm. Even my wife, you know, she's an artist and they see her paint.
Beautiful
like,
work.
Oh wow, I could do that. That's cool. Mm-hmm. And they see how good of a mom she is. She's present. She's there. She's mm-hmm. interacting. She's doing arts and crafts with the kids. That's gonna go. My kids are gonna do that with their kids.
Yes.
You know? When you don't have a parent there doing that, mm-hmm. the kid has no like template.
That's right.
To move forward and see when their parents, they don't even know. That's because I believe it all starts at the home, bro. Mm-hmm. It's parenting. It's, mm-hmm. you know, I'm constantly correcting my kids on like, even Serafina will go, sometimes my daughter will go, oh, you know, we went to Legoland and I won this. I won that. I go, come here. We don't brag. Mm-hmm. We don't. Mm-hmm. Tout what we got. Mm-hmm. I go, some people might have a smaller house than us. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make that less than. You know, like, mm-hmm. these are the teachings that yeah. you have to be instilling in your kids. And I see on the flip side, parents just let that go. The bragging, the this, the mm-hmm. that, and it's not corrected. Mm-hmm. Shit, man. It's like this is 24/7 parenting.
Absolutely.
Right? And this is why I feel sometimes if I am not there, not that my wife.
It'll slip a little.
Yeah. Yep. It's going to slip. But my wife is there to mm-hmm. fill in the holes, mm-hmm. but they also need that fatherly mm-hmm. vibe, you yep. know? So I don't know. I'm providing a runway for my kids to have them, and thank God for my wife on this point. She is an adventure seeker. Mm-hmm. No fear. Mm-hmm. Went to Legoland. My kids are, let's go on every roller coaster. I grew up scared out of my gourd to get on a roller coaster. But I'm at Legoland with my kids, and it's amazing what kids will make you do. My daughter said, Dad, you want to go on a roller coaster? And I couldn't deny her enjoying that moment with me, even though I might have thrown up mm-hmm. while I was
on the roller coaster.
We have a video of it, and to see her and me interacting in the back, because my wife was filming, it was like, I would have missed it. Mm-hmm. I would have missed it. And it's not about the house, the car, the toys. It's about those little memories that she's going to sit there when she's 22 years old. And Daddy, remember when we went on the dragon at Legoland? Mm-hmm. And it's like, how great was mm-hmm. that? So that's what I'm trying to be. And I'm going to take them on tour with me. Not that they're going to do every city, but mm-hmm. now they're at the age, they're going to enjoy this with me. And hopefully when I'm 60, 65 years old, I won't be doing
no, I'm going to call you on your 65th birthday. Hey, bro, I need you. That was my favorite part of the interview because you got a little emotional there about your babies. Thing I admire most about you is that, you know, as I got to know you a little bit, but as I observe you, I think you're a world-class husband and father. And you're just an immensely talented dude. You're really unique. Everyone's got a little peek inside of who you are today. And I enjoyed it, brother. The stuff with the kids, most stuff with their kids, I think is caught, not taught. I think they catch it. They're seeing how hard their daddy works. They're seeing their mom's beautiful artwork. They're seeing how loving and caring and present she is and you are. And somehow that stuff transfers over. I just really believe that. So today was awesome.
Well, I got to tell you, bro, and we talked about me not doing a lot of podcasts or maybe me being uncomfortable and not showing mm-hmm. who I really am because I'm guarded on some of these things. But for you, And you should really be proud of yourself that you have a platform like this where people are able to share their stories. Because, you know, I tune into your podcast and people feel, I could feel it through the camera. People are comfortable. They're who they are.
Yeah.
They're not trying to be somebody else. And you really make it comfortable for people to talk, even though we're in a movie theater and
we're in a dark room today. Some person's house. It's awesome.
No, it's really nice.
They were very kind to have us here today too. Well, I think the big thing I want you guys to go do is go see him on tour this year on It Ain't Right. This is, listen, of all him, hey, this is the funniest dude on the planet. And let me just tell you this. I used to watch him. The reason I asked him to be on the show 4 or 5 years ago, and this is who he is. I used to watch these clips that he's referring to that everybody, the farting in the towels thing with Lana and the, like the funniest person I've ever seen in my life. The most talented. I mean, I'll just look, every other comic that's been on, they know this. I think everybody's really funny. And then I think there's this dude. And I just think his work is unbelievable. He's the best. He's the GOAT. I'm really grateful that I've got to know you because I admire you so much. So, and now that you're a dad and a father, it's gone to a whole new level. So thank you for being here today, brother.
I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Yeah, man. All right, everybody. Share today's episode. I know you will. This is a special one. Go see Sebastian on tour. Go follow him on social media. God bless you. Max out.
This is the Ed Milet Show.